ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
So, Tegan, you like these sort of hanging onto wall kind of exercises? Do you have a little Valium or something? This is your pre-workout thing?
What, so I'm not so anxious on the wall?
Yeah.
No, I generally climb in the morning while I'm driving to the gym in the car, usually listening to a podcast. I am drinking black coffee and eating a banana or something similarly in the simple carbohydrates category.
Right. Have you tried one morning not doing that and seeing whether you fall off the wall?
Well, I used to not do it at all. And then there was one morning that I did have that and I couldn't believe what an athlete I was. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe there's something in this, because I'd sort of heard that black coffee and a banana was like the thing. Now I think there's a placebo effect because if I miss it and I'm not like firing, I think it's because I didn't have it.
It's the lack of banana.
The lack of banana. How about you? What do you have before you go and do your 7 minutes on the elliptical trainer?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing. I go into a fasting state.
Not even a cough?
Not even a coffee. Straight in.
Raw dogging the gym.
Yeah. Hardcore. And that's what we're going to be talking about today on What's That Rash, where we answer your questions and the questions that everyone's asking.
I'm health reporter Tegan Taylor, and I'm on Jagera and Turrbal land.
And I'm physician and journalist Dr. Norman Swan, coming to you from Gadigal land. And today's question comes from Meg.
Hi, Tegan and Norman. I'm just wondering whether there are any benefits to taking pre-workout before heading to the gym. I've been taking it every morning just as a matter of habit, and I'm finding I'm taking more and more. And I'm just curious whether it is actually having any impact on my workout, if it's good for me or bad for me, if there's such a thing as too much, and what actually is in it. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
So pre-workouts, Norman, is that something that you've heard of before?
I tend to be blissfully ignorant about it because I ignore them and I assume that they actually don't work. Although, in fact, I think on a previous Watch That Rash, I might have mentioned black coffee and black tea as assisting fatty acid mobilization, so you're burning more fatty acids. And we got an email from one of our subscribers who said she's been trying it before exercise and swears by it. So it's in the ether.
Well, okay, so an interesting little spoiler then is that a lot of these pre-workouts contain caffeine. And so that is something that I want to get to. We'll talk about the ingredients and that sort of thing, but first I think we have to talk about the marketing, because they are an incredibly energetically marketed thing in terms of the labels and that sort of thing. What I want you to do right now, Norman, is just quickly Google pre-workout and just kind of get a sense of the labeling situation that we're talking about here.
Okay, I'm doing it right now. Pre-workout gummies.
Ooh.
God. There's shops full of the stuff. I mean, that was more, you know, I'm vaguely aware of stuff that you take afterwards, ultra-processed proteins and things like this. But you've now just opened my eyes to an amazing world.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're definitely also ultra-processed. So if you're not currently looking at a box or a bottle of pre-workout, they're very much like graffiti sort of thing. There's real kind of aggressive language around it.
Street smart.
Yeah, very street smart, kind of warish, sort of like upsetting the system, being disruptive and that sort of thing.
Is it mostly bloke oriented?
I get a very bro energy from the way that they're marketed. Although, of course, Meg, our question asker, is a woman. And I think it's a very like traditional gym weightlifting optimizing kind of space.
So here's my question to you, Tegan. So is it sufficient to look at the marketing to get that bro energy, or do you have to actually consume pre-workout supplements?
I think you also have to consume them, but there's also a whole language around it as well. So when I was started to look at this, I thought that the sorts of things that I would need to Google were the ingredients, which of course I did, but I also had to Google things like stim, pump, nootropics. And these are sort of the various claims that were on the packaging. Stim as in like something containing a stimulant, so like caffeine. Pump as in something that's going to make your muscles like juicy and bulging. And then things that promote muscle endurance or even kind of like mental focus and endurance.
So are there any that will give me a washboard abdomen after one session?
I'm sure that they will claim to. You might need to do your own controlled trial to find that out.
So in the world of placebos, they're all creating huge expectations.
We should talk about what's in them, but I do think that it would be interesting to also discuss the placebo idea as well.
So take us through the stims, the pumps, and everything else in between.
Right. So these products vary in their formulation, but there's a couple of different ingredients that crop up again and again. And I thought it would be useful to sort of go through what they are. And the first one is the one we've already touched on a little bit, and that's caffeine. And caffeine is a performance enhancer to the point where it was actually banned. It was on the list of banned substances by the International Olympic Commission from 1984 through to 2004.
God, that's a long time between coffees.
No, and I was wondering about that. I sort of feel like I need to do a different deep dive into what athletes were doing and how they kind of kept
it. But it was at a certain level, wasn't it? It wasn't, you were allowed to drink coffee and tea. It was just at a certain level they were banning.
Yeah, and even now it's still monitored by certain athletic associations, and you've got to keep it within a certain urine caffeine concentration below a certain point, which is still, if you were consuming that much caffeine, you would still sort of have triple the intake that's reported to enhance performance and probably be incredibly jittery as well.
So that's caffeine, which is in everyone. And I seem to remember from some of the work, I think it was done at the University of New South Wales on tea and coffee, that it may not just have been the caffeine. It might have been other things in tea and coffee, which are antioxidants. There's all sorts of things in tea and coffee which can be good for you. So take us through some of the other things that are in there.
One is called citrulline. Have you heard of this one before?
Yeah, I think it's also called L-citrulline, which is the directionality of the molecules. You can get L and R, and L usually is more compatible with your metabolism. But anyway, carry on.
Well, it's an amino acid. So it does a couple of different things in your body. But I think in these supplements, the effect that people are going for is vasodilation, so widening your blood vessels. They think it might play a part in muscle building. But I think even if it doesn't, you probably get that look at the end of your session that you're like juicier than you were before. Interestingly, if you want a natural source of L-citrulline, you can find it in watermelon.
Indeed.
And so a lot of the substances in these pre-workout supplements are either like amino acids or they're like precursors to amino acids.
What about beta-alanine? That's another thing in these substances.
Beta-alanine is another precursor to a different compound that we know is useful. So beta-alanine is an amino acid. It increases something called muscle carnosine. And we know that carnosine concentrations are higher in certain types of muscle, especially in muscles of athletes who are really good at anaerobic exercise. So sprinters, people who are lifting weights, have been found to have higher concentrations of carnosine inside their muscles. And so the idea is that beta-alanine could help your muscles also look like that of a power lifter or a sprinter.
But is there actual evidence? I mean, this is reminiscent of a lot of complementary products where at their core, there's a physiological rationale for using them. But the big question is, do they work when you actually take them for the intended purpose?
This is it. And when I was looking into this, I kind of kept thinking again and again of our recent chat that we had about multivitamins and this idea that we know that individually and in certain settings, these compounds are good for us or have an effect that we can measure. But whether you get that same effect in a combined form, in a powder that you can buy off a shelf that's really shelf stable that you're mixing up and then it tastes like, you know, sour watermelon raspberry flavor, whether that translates through seems a little mistier to me. The other thing that beta-alanine supplementation can do is make you feel really tingly, like not in a good way, sort of itchy and tingly for the first hour or so after you take it.
Which probably gives you an idea that it might be working, I suppose, if it gives you that sort of funny effect.
I did wonder that. I wondered whether maybe like, oh yeah, it's working. Like I can feel an effect from this thing that I had. I don't think the tingling in itself is performance enhancing.
So far your coffee and a banana is winning out. What about creatine? So I understood creatine to actually have some evidence behind it.
Yeah. So creatine's a compound. It comes from three amino acids, and you can get it in food. Most people get it through seafood and red meat. But when you're supplementing it, you're getting a whole lot more of it. What it does is a couple of different stages in this process. We're going to go through some cellular biology. If you supplement with creatine, you get more of a substance called phosphocreatine, which helps your body create a molecule called adenosine triphosphate, which is ATP. And ATP,
pure energy.
Yeah, it's the energy source within the cell. It's involved in all sorts of different cellular processes, including cells transmitting information to each other. It's energy for within the cell itself. I mean, it's important for sort of manufacturing DNA. It's a really, really important molecule in the body. So creatine seems to help increase muscle strength and muscle mass. And then if you take it over a longer period of time, like not just a single dose of it, but if you sort of take it for a week or more, it does seem to have a cumulative benefit. So that's kind of cool as well. And the other thing that creatine also does is it makes your body retain water a little bit, which some people might not like if they're trying to get really shredded, but it makes your muscles look bigger as well. So I think it can also have the effect of feeling
like it's water on your muscles.
Oh yeah, like it makes your muscles look bigger if that's one of the things you're going after.
Yeah, I mean, there's different ways of doing that. I remember a cartoon in The New Yorker a few years ago where this guy's standing around with their togas on in the forum and one of the guys says, look, if you just hold your toga like this, bending his arm, you can really, you know, make your biceps look great.
Yeah, it's something we've been chasing. The other thing with creatine, and we're talking, of course, about pre-workouts, and a really important part of making creatine work is the workout part. So,
Oh, no, you're spoiling it now.
I know, there's a sting in the tail.
Yeah, you didn't have to do the workout. You could just take the supplement and feel great.
So, yeah, apparently, according to one study that I read, creatine works really well if you combine it with a strength training regime and you kind of go, well...
What a shock.
Yes, exactly.
So, I mean, we could go through the list of things. There's taurine, there's all, we could just go through an endless because, I mean, I was just looking at the Shelby Trainer, our producer, as usual, done amazing research on this and given us some of the recipes for these things. I mean, they've just got almost everything in it. They're having five bob each way, as they'd say in the old days.
Yeah, and I think one of the groups of studies that I looked at were people who looked at multi-supplements. So basically multi-ingredient sports supplements. And what they're doing is going, okay, we know that creatine by itself, or we know that beta-alanine by itself has an effect, maybe, but what do you do when you have these things coming together? And the truth is, there's not nothing there. There's definitely some sort of performance-enhancing effect, but in the studies that I looked at, most of them are pretty small, like maybe 20 people and maybe quite short duration. There's an effect that's measurable, but it's not turning a couch potato into a ripped athlete. Sorry, Norman.
Oh, okay. And they're all different. So which one do you choose? I mean, that's the other thing.
Yeah. And I think for some people, I mean, we're not here to prescribe different things. Some people really don't have a good reaction to the stimulants, the caffeine that are in these things. You can imagine a situation where you're having a coffee or a tea in the morning, and then you're having this on top of that, and you could end up feeling quite jittery. Like I said before, the beta-alanine has that tingling effect that people maybe don't like. And they're not cheap and they don't seem to have a huge effect. So a little bit like when we were talking about the menstrual tracking chat a couple of weeks ago, maybe if you're a super elite athlete and there's milliseconds or grams between you and your closest competitor, maybe they give you an edge there. But whether they're going to make you an incredible athlete if you're a bit of a weekend warrior or going to the gym a couple of times a week, maybe you should save your money.
Yeah, and here's one with vitamin B6 in it. So you're just going to be a bit concerned that the tingling effect that you were talking about might be the vitamin B6 affecting your nerves.
So what you mentioned last time, the context here is that you mentioned last time that overdosing with B6 can affect your nerves. And I think what can happen with, you've got a whole lot of different stuff that's over the counter. It's not being prescribed by a physician or even a pharmacist. And so what you can end up having is that you've got these things, they're not inactive. They actually are having an effect on the body, and then layered on top of each other, they could be creating negative side effects.
So what about the placebo effect? I mean, you're talking about small studies. I mean, they're powerfully marketed. They create expectations on the tin. Admittedly, they're ultra-processed, which is something that we haven't really touched upon. But enormous placebo effect if it's creating expectations, surely.
Yeah, and I think something, exercise performance has such a strong psychological side, and there's whole fields of psychology dedicated to sports psychology. We know that expectations and mindset is part of how people perform, so maybe there is a placebo effect there, and there's certainly studies that showed that that could be part of it. But maybe if it's part of your ritual around exercising, that you get up and you have your pre-workout and you hit the gym and it's all part of how you build up to performing, then there could be a placebo effect there. A placebo effect is still an effect. But then there's also this fact that these compounds do have an effect in the body. And the disclaimers on these products are slightly scary sometimes. They're sort of, don't use them if you're pregnant or breastfeeding. Talk to a healthcare practitioner before using it. If you have a rapid heartbeat, chest pain, shortness of breath, lightheaded. Like, don't use it anymore.
If your skin starts unpeeling. Yeah.
And then my favourite is, this is from one of them that I looked at, if you're a performance athlete, check with your sanctioning body prior to use to ensure compliance, which I don't know if it's code for this isn't going to be compliant or if that's kind of a way of marketing something that's going, you should check because that's how powerful this substance is. Like, it's a marketing thing.
It could be, but it's also the manufacturer having just been careful because rules change and something they've gotten there could quickly become something that people need to be worried about. But you're right. The thought that this might be a true performing enhancing compound and you're not in professional competition might be attractive to you. And of course, what we haven't talked about at all, but I think it's for another day, is what the objectives are of your workout.
This is it. Exactly. And if, I mean, pick an objective, there'll be a pre-workout for that. But again, whether they can follow through with anything that's more than a statistically significant change is still pretty unlikely.
And for the record, I gave up on a washboard abdomen a long, long time ago. So what's your takeaway for Meg then?
Yeah, I think the takeaway is that the ingredients themselves do seem to have evidence behind them, but the actual multi-ingredient supplements is not heaps of really good quality research. There's probably a bit of an effect there, but not massive. Although I will say one of her questions was, how much should I take? They almost all say don't exceed one dose per day. So again, it's not no effect, and so don't overdo it.
So we've got other workout questions coming through, which we'll do on future Watch That Rashes.
Yeah, and you can always email us thatrash@abc.net.au. And actually, Norman, someone emailed us about a comment that you made when we were doing our episode on artificial sweeteners, where you said that fructose was toxic, I think is the word that you used. And we've actually had a couple of people write in about that, including someone who's actually researched this.
Someone who actually knows about it, yeah. This is Kerry Mills, University of Canberra, has written in with a long email. I just have to say straight up, I was quoting out-of-date research without knowing it. What I was talking about was old research which suggested that fructose behaves like a fat in the body and can damage the liver and so on. Kerry has done what are called meta-analyses, where she's brought together the available evidence on fructose and the body, and she cannot find any evidence of that, that it is toxic. She's found that it is turned into glucose quite quickly in the body. It doesn't stay as fructose. And that, if anything, it's slightly beneficial compared to other sugars, but she doesn't make that claim at all. But it's not any more harmful than glucose or sucrose. So I correct myself and I will not say that again. And Kerry, thank you very much for writing in and correcting the record.
Thank you so much for Kerry for writing in. And Norman, it actually, looking at that research that Kerry was outlining, it's made me really curious again to dig into that. And I think maybe there's either a health report or What's That Rash in-depth chat about fructose sometime in our future.
Will do.
Send your questions to That Rash or hit us up on Instagram. Our handle is @ABC Health and we'll see you next week.
See you then.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.